There is a tremendous hostility to Christianity that is developing in Europe at this time. The secularization and the paganization of large sections of Europe is absolutely tragic. And we see a general atheism and heathenism, something that you wouldn't have imagined a century ago, that many would be going back to raw paganism, Wicca. You can see this in how films like Harry Potter are promoting occult, Avatar promoting Eastern religions, and open humanistic advertising that you can be good without a belief in God. And some, like our dear friend Richard Dawkins, actually sponsoring bus adverts saying there's probably no God. Now, stop worrying and enjoy your life. Probably. I just love the word probably. He doesn't even have the definiteness to be able to say there's definitely. And so Christians in Britain have responded with, the fool has said in his heart there's no God. And there's definitely a God, so join the Christian party and enjoy your life. So this is a bit of a battle of the buses. But you can see the paganism all over in tattoos. Notice tattoos and body piercing along with graffiti seems to go together. And people have written about our culture, what's left of it. And you can see some of the most ghastly, disgusting body piercing, body mutilations all over. And you wonder what is going on in these people's minds and souls that they would devastate and wreck their bodies to such an extent. And it's plainly demonic, actually. A lot of this is absolutely occultic. And yet this is blatant. But amidst all this blatant heathenism, there are surprisingly dynamic pockets of spiritual vitality and spiritual life. Like here in Belfast, outside Stormont, the Parliament for Northern Ireland, here's a prayer meeting. A big prayer meeting. A really enthusiastic group of Christians in Northern Ireland. Now, Northern Ireland, most of us know for the troubles, the struggle, the violence, sectarian violence between the Catholics and the Protestants. And in fact, it's extraordinary that some of the major spiritual life in Europe is in places that have been afflicted with a lot of violence and oppression. And here in Northern Ireland, where some of the worst terrorism took place, I mean, look what a police station looks like in Northern Ireland. Battened down. I mean, if we thought our police stations down here looked like forts, nothing compared to Northern Ireland. I mean, this is a police station. You can see they're concerned about everything from rocket launchers to grenades. And this is a police station. You can see the barriers. And by the way, you see the Statue of Mary. You can get the impression this is a Catholic suburb, and so the police station is more vulnerable. And here is the entrance to the courts. This is the court in Belfast. And this is what they've got to do. They've got to barricade it up. It looks worse than the Berlin Wall. This is the entrance to the court. And you can tell when you're in a Catholic area in Northern Ireland, very clearly. And you can also tell, by the way, these are the barricades between Protestant and Catholic suburbs. So if you've heard of apartheid in South Africa, well, the people in Belfast say, well, we know more about apartheid than anyone else. But you know when you're in a Protestant area as well, it's extremely obvious. The walls are filled with history lessons, and they state their beliefs and their faith very clearly. And the rallying point for the Protestants in Northern Ireland for the last 50 years has been Dr. Ian Paisley, whose church has, the Martyrs Memorial Presbyterian Church, has been filled from then to now, when I've been visiting, absolutely dynamic centre for missions, for evangelism. And Ian Paisley is in the streets. In fact, he took me on Friday. Every Friday he's outside City Hall and preaching the gospel. This is a youth rally in Northern Ireland. And just notice the conservative attire of these young people. These people aren't into body piercing or paganism, as you saw the pictures earlier. So there's something going on in Northern Ireland. The Free Presbyterian Church is only about 50 years old, but here at their 50th anniversary, they were celebrating 100 congregations planted with a vast amount of members. Notice Protestants gathering in Belfast outside the City Hall in front of Queen Victoria's statue. This back in the early 1900s to protest against attempts to integrate them with Catholic Southern Ireland. Notice the largest gathering ever in Northern Ireland, and this is Ian Paisley gathered a 250,000 people together in Belfast. By the way, 250,000 people is about the entire population of Belfast. They probably had people from the outlying areas too, but the largest gathering ever. And this gathered by Protestants to say, we will remain Protestant, we will never bow to Catholicism. Switzerland's another outpost of Christianity, and many other places, there are pockets of Christian life. But the general picture in Europe is one of spiritual decline. And into the spiritual decline, you get the Muslims coming in. In London, slay those who insult Islam. Europe, you will pay. Demolition is on its way. Behead those who insult Islam. Butcher those who mock Islam. Europe, you will pay. Your extermination is on its way. Now, in 1900, evangelicals in Europe constituted 45% of all evangelicals. Notice the pink represents Europe and the red North America. So notice, of the greatest Protestant nations in the world, 8 were in Europe and 2 were in North America, Canada and USA. And the greatest country in terms of Protestants was USA, and the second largest was Germany, and the third largest was Britain. That's how it was in 1900. That's not the way it is now. Here you can see the yellow areas are where 10 to 20% or more of the population are evangelicals. Notice outside of Europe, Australia, New Zealand, South Africa and Rhodesia, and you can see North America, of course, Canada and USA. And in Europe, Scandinavia, all of Scandinavia, from Iceland, Norway, Sweden, Denmark, Finland, and Estonia, and Holland, Switzerland, Britain, having over 20%. Notice the way this works. Over 10 to 20%. But the lighter shade, is which Germany is in, is under 10% evangelicals, because remember, about half of Germany is more Catholic, more in the south. So that lowers the whole country as a whole, even though the north should have been painted yellow, but because of the strong Catholic Bavaria south, they were marked there. So you could see the darker areas, like Belarus, the least amount of evangelicals, since under half a percent. Whereas you could see the lighter areas where there's more evangelicals. That's Europe in 1900. This is Europe today. The only place you get a bright yellow now is Moldova and Romania. And it's under 5% just about everywhere else. It's, as you can see, basically on the 5 to 10% in Ukraine, Romania, United Kingdom, Germany, Norway, Finland. Now, the brightest spots in Europe in terms of evangelicals is Ukraine, followed by Romania and Northern Ireland. I mean, that's just in terms of sheer percentage of evangelicals. Isn't that extraordinary that two of them are behind our old Iron Curtain, and one's an area that's been renowned for its troubles and attacks, and that's where Christianity is its strongest at the moment. Here you can see in 1900, this is the dividing line between Europe, North America, and the Pacific Islands of Australia and New Zealand. And here's Africa, Asia, Latin America on the right. So you can see Protestants in the yellow, Independents, the red line, Anglicans, the light blue, the dark blue Catholic, the purple Orthodox and the marginal and the dark there. So you can see overwhelmingly Christianity of all types was in the West, with just the Catholics peeking into Latin America on the right. But this is how it is by the year 2000. The center of gravity for everyone except the Orthodox has moved into the so-called Third World. Much less Protestants, Anglicans in Europe and North America than there are now in Asia, Africa and Latin America. And notice how the independents have become a huge block now. Massive. Just again to have a look, see how thin the independents were, the thin red line, and see how thick the red lines become now. Well, have a look at this. This is a very interesting chart. Here you can see in 1900, top 20 countries for Christians, this is just Christian population, that'll count Protestants, Catholic, Orthodox, all. The largest country in the world for number of Christians was USA in 1900, followed by Russia as the second largest, Germany as the third largest. Isn't that interesting? The two countries worst hit by the First World War and the second, Russia and Germany. Christian nations targeted and crushed. And now, if you go on to notice how UK was fifth, and now UK is down to the 13th largest nation of Christians. Notice how South Africa wasn't even on the list in 1900, but we were already up to 19 by 1950, and South Africa's still at 19. We expect it to go up to 13 by 2050 in terms of the largest Christian nation in the world. But look at evangelical. The largest evangelical countries in 1900 were the USA, followed by UK and Germany. And notice how Germany, after the First World War and the Second World War, slipped down to 7th place. Notice also how in 1900, most of the countries were from Europe or North America. Notice how by 2000, no country of Europe is in the top 10, and only one is in the top 20. Notice also by 1960 how South Africa had become the third largest country for evangelicals in the world by 1960. Isn't that extraordinary? Well, here's missionary sending countries. This is also fascinating. In 1900, the three largest mission sending countries were United Kingdom, USA, and Germany. That's in 1900, before the First World War. After the First World War, notice Germany had been pushed down to the 8th place for missionary sending because they'd been so bombed and starved and wrecked and divided, of course, by the Berlin Wall as well. So a great Protestant missionary sending country was undermined. Notice how South Africa went from being 5th place in 1900, missionary sending, slid down to 10th place by 1960. That was in the heyday of apartheid and the whole sanctions on South Africa and boycotting. South Africa slipped down to 12th place by the year 2000, and they think we'll be on the 13th place by 2010. We're now about the 13th largest missionary sending country in the world. Interesting things that you can see there. So here's another chart showing from where the missionaries were sent. Obviously, this is in the year 2000, so you can see overwhelmingly cross-cultural missionaries are coming from North America and Europe still, with South Africa still being quite significant. Even Australia and New Zealand, amazingly, sending missionaries. The 19th century was the greatest century of missionary advance. It was a century of astounding inventions, spectacular advances in technology. And many countries in Europe experienced dynamic spiritual revivals, tremendous spiritual revivals. Charles Spurgeon, D.L. Moody, great names. Christian missionaries like Dr. David Livingstone, C.T. Studd, Hudson Taylor were winning whole tribes and nations for Christ in the most remote regions of the world. For over 1,000 years, Europe had been Christendom, the heartland and the stronghold of Christian civilization. The 19th century had seen such staggering growth in numbers, productivity, power, and wealth that most would have imagined that Europe would have come to dominate the globe for centuries to come. Who would have imagined in 1914 that Europe would not be the most dominant power militarily, economically, politically, in every way for another 100 or 1,000 years to come? It was all set up for that. Europe controlled the world in 1900, except for China, which was dominated by Japan and the Ottoman Empire, which was decaying. But the rest of the world was dominated by Europe and North America. The optimism which prevailed in the 19th century gave way to profound pessimism after the First World War. The First World War absolutely shattered Europe. An entire generation of young men died in brutal trench warfare, fighting themselves. So 1914 marked the end of the greatest century of Christian advance, and it marked the beginning of what proved to be the worst century of persecution. More Christians have died in the last 100 years than have been martyred in the previous 19 centuries combined. The consequence of the First World War continues to have far-reaching repercussions to this present day. Of the 60 million European soldiers who were mobilized from 1914 to 1918 in the First World War, over 9 million were killed. A generation lost. 7 million were permanently disabled. 15 million were seriously injured. That means half of all the soldiers mobilized were casualties in one way or another. Now, at the First World Missions Conference in Edinburgh in 1910, delegates were anticipating the completion of the Great Commission within their generation. They anticipate that by the year 1960, the world would be thoroughly evangelized and discipled. They were absolutely convinced. And why not? No one in 1910 would have anticipated the wholesale abandonment of entire nations to communism, to false religions, and to heathenism. Just look at the red blocks. One third of the world's population under the control of communism by 1975. Look at the sharp red lines in Africa where communism encroached and persecuted the church heavily. Ethiopia, Mozambique, Angola, Congo, Equatoria as well. Absolutely hideous. You can see communist states, satellite states, other socialist Marxist states, other communist states, and versus the blue ones which are NATO or NATO aligned. And you can see how different, what a staggering retreat from victory this was compared to 1914, when Europe and Christian nations ruled or dominated the world. Nobody would have predicted that the church would have retreated from victory. Notice here how all the red diagonal lines represent where the church is persecuted. This is by 1975. This persecution of the church was severe, absolutely, hideously severe. And notice the dark brown is Christian decline, which you can see in New Zealand, Canada, France, Italy, Germany. Tremendous Christian decline, moving away from the great Christian heritage. Sweden, Iceland. Hideous secularization of once great Christian nations. And who would have imagined that the church would have retreated from victory to such an extent that they would even be questioning whether the devil existed, or whether hell is real, or reinterpreting marriage to include what the Bible and God describes as perversion and an abomination. To think that they could be Christian. What constitutes marriage? Can you have unrepentant homosexual perverts as ministers of the gospel? I mean, what kind of questions are these? These people don't even believe the Bible anymore, that they could be asking such hideous questions. Who would have imagined at the Edinburgh Missions Conference in 1910 that before the end of the century, the church would have fallen that far? Because in 1910, they would think, we are going to fulfill the Great Commission, our generation, all the nations will be reached, all the tribes will be evangelized and discipled, the whole world will be entering the millennium before 1960. They were absolutely convinced of it. The optimism before the First World War was sky high. Little would they have guessed what we would have been discussing at the last Lausanne Congress in 2010, Cape Town, just 100 years later, the problems that we're facing today. And what's replaced Christianity in Europe? Atheism. The belief that there was nothing and nothing happened to nothing and then nothing magically exploded for no reason. Creating everything and then a bunch of everything magically rearranged itself for no reason whatsoever into self-replicating bits which turned into dinosaurs. Makes perfect sense. Okay. What's the evidence for creation? How do you understand atheism? Okay, start here. There is no God. But how do you know there's no God? Well, there's no evidence for God. What about the universe? Life, DNA, RNA, protein synthesis, intelligence, specified complexity, the Bible, fulfilled prophecy, the resurrection of Jesus, the laws of cause and effect, objects of morality, the laws of physics, the Cambrian explosion of fossil record, designs of nature, irreducible complexity, second law of thermodynamics, human consciousness, the impossibility of an eternal universe, the probability in mathematics and biology, the impossibility of embryogenesis, what about archaeology, the history of Israel, and then there's this little thing called logic. Okay, when evidence is presented, restate your first assumption. There is no God. But how do you know there's no God? There's no evidence for God. You see, it's easy to be an atheist. All you've got to do is deny God, your eyes, common sense, probabilities, rationality, and logic. The cataclysmic conflict of the First World War has got to be recognized as one of the most tragic and senseless conflicts in all of history, when Christians were conned into fighting one another. Even more devastating than actual numbers of the people killed, crippled, or seriously injured was the damage to the spiritual life of Europe. Europe went from being a majority church-going continent to a continent where most people didn't go to any church at all. And the secularization of Europe and the moral breakdown coincided with a great resurgence of revolutionary fervor of the French Revolution and 1830 and 1848 type, and of the Paris Communards of 1870. So it's not that revolution began, it was just a resurgence of the old revolutionary spirit which had been beaten. And Marxist communism filled the vacuum left by the collapse of the Russian Empire and emergence of so many new countries in Eastern Europe as the Versailles Treaty broke up the Austro-Hungarian Empire, which had been a tremendous bulwark against Islam from the East, and the Turks in particular. The de-Christianization and the secularization of Europe was not only unprecedented in its scope and in its speed, but it would have been absolutely unthinkable without the First World War. The First World War was no accident. It wasn't a couple of nations blundering into war. It was clearly an orchestrated event by evil powers behind the scenes who had an agenda: destroy Christianity in its heartland. Social Darwinism had become popular amongst most governments in Europe. And there was a general thinking at that time that emphasized the importance of armed struggle between nations as healthy and necessary for progress and evolution. This was what you call social Darwinianism. Now, The Origin of Species, bear in mind, the full title is The Origin of Species by Means of Natural Selection or The Preservation of Favored Races in the Struggle for Life. This kind of survival of the fittest mentality was very much part of general way of thinking in all the governments of Europe at that time. And so here they're showing in what looks almost scientific, but it's from goo to the zoo to you. I mean, really and truly, how on earth do you believe mud turns into monkeys and into man? But these are the kind of weird things that put out and say that this cow is my 27 millionth cousin. This butterfly, dragonfly, is my 300 millionth cousin. How do they know? Who did the calculations here? And these kind of mindless graphics, which prove nothing because you've never found the missing link. So, fossils are dated by the rocks they found in. But how do you date the age of the rocks? Rocks are dated by the fossils they contain. But how do you date the age of the fossils? Fossils are dated by the rocks they found in. So, this is circular reasoning. The only thing that's really old about evolution is the circular reasoning. Social Darwinism. Darwinianism is an atheist lie. But in politics, it's policy. In the wake of the two world wars, many people came to speak of a post-Christian Europe. Wars and revolutions throughout the entire world led to disorder. I think one of the most amazing things is the order that Europe had brought to the world. That you didn't need fences and security gates and burglar bars, and you didn't need locks and keys for everything. The world was safe and peaceful. Even Europe, even Africa, you could be in the Congo, in the jungle where there used to be cannibals, and there was order and peace and safety. Something that, talk about Pax Romana, nothing compared to the Pax Europeana that Europe brought to the world. Europe brought a peace and a stability and a progress that the world had never seen before. And to appreciate that, we had to see it go. And as Christianity was generally marginalized throughout Europe, look at the chaos that has followed in its wake. And just if the First World War hadn't finished the job, the Second World War came to absolutely flatten in the heartland of Europe where the Reformation had been birthed, flattening entire cities, murdering millions of people. And Europe was split into half as communism stretched into the very heartland of Europe. What people call Central Europe, let me remind you, was not Eastern Europe, it was Central Europe. Poland, East Germany, Czechoslovakia, Hungary, that's not Eastern Europe, that's Central Europe. Russia's Eastern Europe. So the fact that Europe, right into its heartland, was encroached upon by communism. And here you can see East German youth having nothing but rocks to throw at the Russian T-34 tanks. And in 1956, as the Hungarians rose up in Budapest and burned Lenin and Marx materials and toppled this idol of Stalin, and the tanks rolled in, so they had to try and put barricades in the streets with the trams. And look at the devastation. People marching Russians out of Hungary. And here some of the Hungarians had taken over some of the Russian tanks. And here they're burning Stalin's pictures. And here you can see a dead Russian soldier in the foreground and some of the chaos of a burned out Russian gas truck. People walking very unconcernedly by. Look at the devastation of Budapest as the Russian tanks rolled in. This isn't meant to be a war. They used tanks in the city and they just pulverized the place. No doubt people had good reason for fleeing, and over 3 million East Germans voted with their feet and fled to the West. And the Berlin Wall sprang up in order to stop the flight of even their own soldiers. People were shot in the back, like Peter Fetcher here, on his 18th birthday, as he tried to move from Berlin to Berlin, from one part of Germany to another. And this became the most visible evidence, the most tangible part of the Cold War and the Iron Curtain. People continued to escape by tunnels, one way or the other. Czechoslovakia tried to put on communism with a human face, and as a result they were invaded by the Russians and other Warsaw Pact countries, who came in and flattened them. It was brutal. Hundreds of thousands of people were killed in Budapest's uprising in 1956 and Czechoslovakia in 1968. You can see the Russian weaponry coming in and the devastation caused in the town. A traffic jam with tanks downtown in Prague. And all the Prague citizens could do was complain verbally to the Russians, who were destroying their freedom again. Idolatry survived in the most blatant form in the Soviet Union. Here, these idols of Stalin and Lenin, who just were toppled in 1989-1990. Here you can see the Czechs protesting. This is Ceausescu, Nicolae Ceausescu, dictator of Romania, in his last speech just before Christmas in 1989, and the population protesting against him in downtown Budapest. He was shot by his own army and body burned. And then all the statues of Lenin were toppled, and Lenin's statues were decapitated and sent to the junk heaps where they belong. And there's a joke about Yeltsin going outside the Kremlin and seeing some of his supporters hacking to pieces a statue of Lenin. And he said, "Stop! Have you not learned anything from the Americans? We can sell them. We can ship these off to the West and sell them to the universities." And of course, that's what they do. Many of the Berkeley University in America went out of their way to buy a Lenin statue from Russia, and they installed it in California. That they are people that stupid. Well, this looks a nice type of flag. It doesn't look red, it looks blue, and how friendly. But there's something quite sinister behind the European Union. This is how European Union is right now. Notice the light yellow are the first members of the European Union, which is from Spain, Portugal, through France and Germany, up to Sweden and Finland, and the United Kingdom, down to Italy and Greece. But in 2004, they added Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Poland, Czech and Slovakia, Hungary. And in 2007, added Romania and Bulgaria. And now they've got EU candidates of Croatia, Macedonia and Turkey. It's unbelievable that anyone would consider bringing Turkey into Europe, but there's a lot of opposition to that too. Notice the countries that refuse to have anything to do with the EU: Iceland, Norway and Switzerland. Those three countries steadfastly remain neutral and don't want to be part of the EU. Good for them. Well, I speak to a lot of people in Denmark, Germany and Austria who would like to get out of the EU themselves, and they feel they were bullied into it. So these are the flags of the countries that at this moment are officially part of the EU. And there's the EU flag and the NATO flag, and of course NATO is a bit broader, but you'll notice absent from here is Norway, Iceland and Switzerland's flags. So that's the EU. Christians in Britain are now speaking of a Christophobia, where an irrational hatred and fear of Christianity is increasing. I mean, imagine somebody walking around with a dumb poster like this: if Jesus returns, kill him again. Well, I'd like to see them try. Mm-hmm. Because the first time he came as a lamb of God to take away the sins of the world as a sacrifice. But the second time he's not coming as a lamb. He's coming as the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And he's not coming to save, he's coming to judge. So if any of these people want to kill Jesus again, I think, well, I'd like to watch them try, because the Bible says they're going to be crying for the mountains to fall on themselves to hide them from the wrath of the Lamb. But that people could be so blasphemously, arrogantly stupid as to walk around with dumb t-shirts like this and posters like this and set up websites like undojesus.org. Church buildings in Europe are being vandalized with anti-Christian graffiti on the walls and some of their property looted. British bed and breakfast owners have been sued and fined for refusing accommodation to homosexual partners. Now, this couple had their home as a B&B, I mean it's their home, And when two homosexual living lovers wanted to move in, they said, sorry, we Christians, we can't do that, but if you want to go to those and those B&Bs around the corner, they probably wouldn't have any objection. So they were polite about it, but these faggots obviously wanted to have some deal, and so these people actually got prosecuted. And it's their home, for goodness sakes. My parents said in 1962, when they were traveling up to Johannesburg, they stopped in at Lanesburg for the night, because the N1 then was very, very rough. It was still gravel roads, and you still had the farm gates all the way along to open as you went up the N1. So it was a long journey to get to Joburg, and they stopped in Lanesburg, and the hotel manager wants to see their marriage license before he, my parents were allowed to have a room together. So, you know, hotel managers used to have that kind of standard. Now you're getting prosecuted for not wanting to put two faggots in a room in your own home. Now, these poor people, Ben and Sharon, got prosecuted for the woman, Sharon, making some comment on what she thought of Islam in her private home again. I mean, this is a B&B situation. And they got prosecuted for Islamophobic speech. Said something negative about Islam. The sort of thing that most of us think and say on a normal basis. But can you believe it? People in Britain being prosecuted for having free speech. Notice, intolerance will not be tolerated. Street preachers have been arrested for proclaiming what God's word says about perversion.
Now, jail for preaching the Bible? Here's a Baptist pastor who was arrested or locked up overnight in a jail for making what they called a homophobic remark. Critics condemned dangerous attack on free speech as Baptist is arrested, locked up, and fined £1,000 for saying that being gay is sin. And this born-again Baptist, Sean Holes, was taken away from a busy Scottish shopping centre in a police van, locked up in a cell for the night. And Mr. Holes was charged with uttering homophobic remarks in a breach of the peace that prosecutors said was aggravated by religious prejudice. All of which translated meant he just said what the Bible says about the sin. And so effectively, you can be prosecuted for saying what the Bible says in public. Christianity is born in public street preaching. The Apostle Paul and all of the apostles, Apostle Peter, what was the day of Pentecost, but open air preaching. And today we've got people like, of course, Ray Comfort and Way of the Master people doing street preaching again, Kirk Cameron, and this is normal Christianity. Getting into the marketplace and preaching is exactly what Christians have been called to do from the beginning. Go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. You cannot infringe on street preaching without infringing on freedom of speech, freedom of worship, freedom of thought. And so these sort of people can be getting into serious trouble. And here's brimstone preachers refuse to cool down. Here's a father and daughter team who were found guilty of obstruction as their street sermon angered the crowd. Now, if you read the book of Acts, you'll find the Apostle Paul's preaching often angered the crowds. It was either a revival or there's a riot. And so today, walking around with a t-shirt like repent and handing out gospel tracts could get you into trouble. Here's some Christians arrested in New York City for praying in public. And, I mean, look at the amount of police turning out. And these people are not fine. I mean, wrestling a guy to the ground and face in the ground. Notice his tracks on the ground there. Look at this here. See the scripture poster and the gospel tracks lying on the ground? How many police are out here to arrest this unresisting, unarmed Christian who's not trying to be violent to anybody? And again, the excessive amount of police. This is in Canada, which must be one of the most intolerant countries on the planet right now. This man was arrested for walking down the road with a Canadian flag, and so they considered him to be an extremist because he had the national flag. Does this make sense to anybody? How can having a Canadian flag in Canada be considered some kind of hate crime? And so here's a Daily Press article on Christians today are facing modern day persecutions, and it's speaking about the whole attitude now that religion must go extinct. And so he's saying how by the middle of the 20th century, there was a pretty general view that religion was on the way out, like old superstitions. But the fact is that since 1970, we've added 75% more Christians to the world than there were in 1970. The church has grown exponentially in the last 42 years. And this is a shock to the secularists, because the secularists were convinced, and they were declaring in 1960, God is dead. Religion's gone the way of the dinosaurs. Well, dead as a dodo. I mean, religion's on the way out. And instead, there's been a tremendous religious resurgence, not just of religion, but of evangelical, Bible-believing, fundamental Christianity, which is the kind I hate the most. And so there's an inability to handle this. And so now, what he's pointing out here is you've got people like a dear friend, Richard Dawkins in The God Delusion, saying to teach your children Christianity is child abuse, and to teach any religion is child abuse, and that Christianity is destructive and it's evil and it's the most destructive force in the world, and we've got the root of all evil is religion. This from atheists after a century when atheists have killed how many hundreds of millions of people? I mean, the atheists are in a glass house and they're throwing stones. Ben Stein exposed the outrageous duplicity and double standards and hypocrisy of our university institutions in hounding out of their faculties anybody who believes in intelligent design. I mean, these are scientists who aren't necessarily creationists, but say, well, we see intelligent design, which is obvious, there is intelligent design. And yet they could lose their professorships and be kicked out of universities for that. So we're not just talking about students who've been marked down, but professors losing their jobs. Effectively, the Bible is being banned in many of our institutes of higher learning. Truth is the new hate speech. George Orwell said, during times of universal deceit, telling the truth becomes a revolutionary act. And that's the problem. We're in 1984 type newspeak right now, where Big Brother is watching you, and Big Brother's not happy when you come out with homophobic, bigoted, narrow-minded, evangelical Christian thoughts, because those are thought crimes. And remember Animal Farm, all animals are equal, but some animals are more equal than others, like the pigs, who happen to be the politicians. And government censorship is protecting you from reality. And media control is one of the most spectacular accomplishments of propaganda. Look at some of the things you mustn't think about. This is some tolerant Muslims burning things down in Paris. And you can see the Paris riots, burning French flags. And the newspapers are saying the Paris youth are rioting and French youth are rioting. But it wasn't Pierre and Louis who were rioting. It was Rashid, Abdullah and Mohammed who were doing the rioting. And they called them French youth. And all of this destruction wasn't French youth, it was people of all ages and were all Muslim. And you could see pretty quickly it was an attack against Christianity. This is a well-framed shot of a Danish flag being burned with a cross in the background. This is not an accidental picture. They are saying something here. We are destroying Christianity in the heartland of Europe. And so smashing embassies, trashing places, this is all done by Muslims over a few cartoons in Danish newspapers at the time, ostensibly. Well, if that's not bad enough, then you've got the bombing of the underground and the London bus in the 7th of July 2005. And yet, they were talking about these English youth. They weren't English youth. They were Muslim youth. And the amount of strange things, BBC managed to have a half an hour program on the problem of honor murders. You know what an honor murder is? It's when a Muslim man, either a brother, uncle or father, kills his own daughter for what they call an honor murder, because maybe they don't like her hairstyle or they don't like her clothes or her friends or whatever. Maybe she's just got converted to Christ. But the honor murders are where a Muslim man kills a female relative and nobody in the neighborhood will testify against him. And they managed to have a half an hour program without mentioning Islam, Muslim, Muhammad, Sharia law, Quran. How do you do that? And they spoke about the phenomenon and the problem of increasing problem in Britain of British fathers and brothers, British fathers killing their daughters and British brothers killing their sisters in honor murders. I don't believe this one British father or brother who's killing a female relative. These are all Muslims. And to try and pretend that they are British is ridiculous. The Hebrews weren't Egyptians. Even after 400 years in Egypt, they still were Hebrews. They didn't become Egyptians. In Denmark, they're speaking about the new Danes. What's a new Dane? He's a Muslim Dane. Muslim's not a Dane. You don't get Turkish Germans. You don't get Arab Englishmen. English is English. Arab is Arab. In the Bible, we are commanded to make disciples of every nation. And the word in the Greek is ethne. Make disciples of every ethne, out of which we get our word ethno-linguistic group from. To pretend that a Muslim can be an Englishman, or a Dane, or a Swede, is ridiculous. It just isn't true. And it doesn't matter how much they might say it, it's not true. And now, even the German chancellor has admitted multiculturalism in Europe is a failure. It's an absolute failure. It has not worked. So this god of multiculturalism has come to a skiddy halt. Now, one of the most holy moments in the English-speaking world is the 11th of November. At the 11th minute of the 11th hour, the 11th day of the 11th month, every year they remember the signing of the peace treaty, the armistice that ended the First World War. And so this is Poppy Day. And Britain and Australia, Canada, and even South Africa to some extent, goes wild with poppies because in Flanders fields where poppies grow, and it's in remembrance of the Allied soldiers who died in Belgium in particular. And so this is a very solemn moment to the British. So this is how the Muslim, the new Englishman, as they want to call him, celebrate this. And you can just see the peace and tolerance. Our dead on paradise, you're dead on hell. This is on the 11th of November. British soldiers burn in hell. And here they burn a poppy on the 11th of November in London. And that's not enough. They then decided to attack the police nearby. I mean, just look at the aggression and the momentum. They are going towards the police. Look at them coming in and attacking them with the posters. And it's just extraordinary. Sharia law for Britain. Sharia law for Netherlands. Islam will be superior, it says. By the way, this is not hate speech. This is freedom of speech. This is Sharia law, by the way. Sharia law is woman being imprisoned behind the hijab. Sharia law is lowering the age of consent for marriage down to 8 or 9. And this is what we would call statutory rape in any civilized society, is Sharia law. That you can have older men marrying minors. I mean, can you believe it? This is Sharia law. Whipping women in public. Hanging people for offences that you and I wouldn't think are an offence. Hanging people for converting to Christianity. Hanging women who reported they were raped. This is in Iran. A man cutting his wife's nose off. This is under Sharia law. This is a Muslim in London. Be prepared for the real Holocaust. That's not hate speech, by the way. This is hate speech. Stop Islamism. These Dutch people are demonstrating with that. That is hate speech. Not what you've seen before, that's not hate speech. This Finnish Member of Parliament was prosecuted and fined, a Member of Parliament prosecuted for putting anti-Islamic comments on his blog. Now, I wouldn't have thought a blog is very public, but, and he's a Member of Parliament and that didn't protect him from being fined, a Member of Parliament, for just writing some Islamic comments. The so-called hate speech bill, you would think, oh, hate speech. Great, they're going to ban Muslims saying bomb bomb USA, bomb bomb UK, bomb bomb USA, bomb bomb UK. Maybe that's going to be bad. No, that's not hate speech. What hate speech is us quoting what the Muslims say. That would be hate speech. So basically the hate speech bill is against free speech. You've heard of the thought police, thought crimes. In 1984 it speaks about thought crimes. So looks like you've had a bit too much to think. This is think poll. Support your local thought police. Don't speak out of question. Closed minds stop thought crimes. So, stop thought crimes by closing your mind. And this is a fact. Free speech today is hate speech. You want to say, I don't agree with homosexuality. I don't think homosexual marriage is a marriage. The Bible calls it a perversion. That's a hate crime. That's a thought crime. That's hate speech. To say, well, the Bible calls it a perversion. Our free speech should not be negotiable in a free society. You can't have freedom without free speech and freedom of religion. But the homos have come in on a whole new set of attacks, and now they are targeting Africa. Uganda and Zambia and Malawi have laws against homosexuality, as most of Africa do. And so you get these campaigns against sexual minorities in Uganda. Don't you just love the way they're now turning a sin into a minority group? Now, this man has been absolutely denigrated in the American media because he's apparently a bill sponsor of the Kill the Gays bill. Now, I have not studied the bill, but apparently what Uganda's come out with is the death penalty for homosexual rape. Now, homosexuality is a crime in Uganda, but if a homosexual rapes someone else, he gets the death penalty. Well, I would say all rape should get the death penalty. That's biblical. They're not saying you get the death penalty for having homosexual tendencies. They're saying if you rape somebody, you get the death penalty. And now, this has been billed all around the world as kill the gays. Well, notice these highly spontaneous demonstrations where everyone's got exactly identical posters with exactly the same color and exactly the same typesetting and exactly the same size flag for their different countries. I don't believe there's a representative of the Faroe Islands and Slovenia and Greece and Poland all there. I think it's just they printed all these, distributed them, and all these people come from the same neighborhood. But this is the kind of fake rent-a-mob that you come out with. This is the lesbian and gay rights in Africa nonsense, where they're claiming all these countries in red are countries that have got the death penalty for homos. They haven't got Uganda yet. And all these countries persecute the homos, and the only country that doesn't persecute them is South Africa. The green is because we've got constitutional protections, but the line through means they're still being persecuted by the population, despite the government's attempts to protect them. Shame. Well, shame on Uganda, they say. Well, I must say, I feel very positive towards Uganda these days, that they've got the strength of character to have these laws. Do you know that the European Union and the US State Department, especially Hillary Clinton, is bullying the countries in Africa? You get rid of this discriminatory legislation against homos, are we going to stop all AG? So, they didn't mind Africa massacring missionaries, massacring Christians, wiping out white farmers in Zimbabwe, stealing land, you know, all the different things these governments do. That's not bombing Christians and Sudan. But don't upset the perverts and don't try and protect your population morally. I mean, that we will stop all aid for. This isn't coming because of corruption, mismanagement, dictatorship or anything like that. No, it's to think Europe today has gone to the point where they want to not advance the gospel, but advance perversion. That's how far things have changed. And this kind of mindless garbage attacking Uganda. Did they do this when Idi Amin was slaughtering hundreds of thousands of Christians? Not in your life. That wasn't a problem. Killing Christians is a good thing. But jailing or executing homosexual criminals is wicked. And they know how to ambush you. Recently, Ray Comfort's ally and co-worker Kirk Cameron was ambushed on TV. He had just made a new film called Monumental, speaking about America's Christian heritage, looking at the monuments of America. And they asked him what he thought of homosexual marriage on the interview, where he thought the interview was about his film, and he said, well, homosexuality is unnatural. And they castigated him. He was hit as, you know, hate speech, and you would have thought he was the most vile person. And as Kirk Cameron says, what I said is what is standard Christian convictions. In fact, most of the population believe and have believed for 2,000 years. This is nothing new. The surprise would be if I said something other than that homosexuality is unnatural. And he said it's unnatural and it's destructive. And now they're going, you know, he's a hateful bigot and he's a wicked, evil person. And he said, I should be able to express moral views on social issues, especially those that have been the underpinning of Western civilization for 2,000 years, without being slandered, accused of hate speech, and told from those who preach tolerance that I need to either bend my beliefs to their moral standards or be silent when I'm in the public square. I believe we need to learn how to debate these things with greater love and respect. I've been encouraged by the support of many of my friends. Well, Kirk Cameron did get a lot of support for this from Christians, but boy, was he mutilated in the media. I mean, it just shows the way how they will... And this was what we were saying 11 years ago when we published the Pink Agenda. The homosexuals have an agenda, and they're intolerant. And they are not satisfied with tolerance. They want acceptance. They want approval. And then they want conformity. And they will...
They want to be in the church.
Exactly. They want everything. They want to destroy marriage. They want to destroy the church. And so their goal for homosexual marriage and homosexual priests, all their goal is just to destroy Christianity. That's the only goal. Then you get unethical compulsion in Europe. Medical staff have been placed under extraordinary pressure to participate in procedures that are unethical, like sterilizations, euthanasia, and abortions. So these abortion pills, for example, being pushed in Europe, and many European Union states do not provide for the conscientious objection of medical personnel. And so many midwives and doctors and nurses and pharmacists are being placed under unbearable pressure to go against their conscience. In France, pharmacists are being compelled by law to sell abortion drug RU486, the kill pill. And then there's churches and cemeteries in France and Spain that are being desecrated and vandalized by Muslim immigrants. And in Norway, many historic Christian churches have been burned down by arsonists. Prominent black metal adherents have been convicted of arson, including the burning down of the 850-year-old Fantoft Stave Church. Black metal bands have openly declared war on Christianity, and a prominent black metal band, Burzum, produced an album entitled Aska, or Ashes, with a picture of the charred remains of this famous Viking church that was burned down by their supporters. Now, the Vikings coming to Christ, one of the great monumental points in church history. 1,000 years ago, at the year 1000, virtually all of Scandinavia was converted. And these churches are monuments to the conversion of the Vikings. These are national monuments. Beautifully made. Absolutely magnificent constructions with some extraordinary paintings in them. And many of these burned, systematically destroyed by these black metal thugs. And many black metal and witch house music groups openly declare the hatred of Christianity. As you can see, this is on their bands. See, that's, you see how the cross is in the center there? This is one of theirs. Lost wisdom, spell of destruction, channeling, and notice the occultic symbol. And these are the kind of freaks in this band, and you can see the kind of t-shirts and black metal and broken cross as part of the symbols, and the expression kind of tells it all. Yeah, well, I mean, these guys look like just the sort of person you want to be running your youth group band. The marginalization of Christians and the legal restrictions on Christians is increasingly being recognized as a serious problem. Even Queen Elizabeth II, in a recent speech, spoke out against this ominous trend encroaching on religious freedom in Britain. From hate crimes to legal restrictions to arrests to lawsuits to freedom of religion, freedom of expression, freedom of conscience, all of this is under severe stress in most of Europe. And one example is how Norwegian mass murderer Anders Breivik was instantaneously and falsely labeled a Christian fundamentalist by the media worldwide, and there was absolutely no evidence of this. In fact, in his own writings on the web, he made clear he rejected Christianity and he rejected the Christian God. Here's a picture of him in his Freemasonry outfit. Obviously not a Christian. Yet anti-Christian prejudice is needed a Christian equivalent to Muslim terrorism. See, they're trying to suggest that all religious extremists are violent. So, you know, Muslim fundamentalist, Christian fundamentalist. So if you've got Muslim fundamentalist terrorists, you need Christian fundamentalist terrorists. They aren't around, so we need to label some people as Christian fundamentalists anyway. And all too many journalists thoughtlessly and hastily welcomed this anti-Christian fanatic as a Christian fundamentalist, and they were absolutely delighted to have him to pin this on. In many cases, this is the very same media that refuses to identify the terrorists inspired by Islamic Jihad as Muslim fanatics.
What is the far-right salute? I mean, the clenched fist one.
This looks like a far-left salute to me.
Yes.
In fact, we see our government leaders and Nelson Mandela using this clenched fist salute. So I don't know what exactly is far-right about that. But anyway, this is a far-left story here.
Then you get people who fired for prayer. Dr. David Drew was fired for emailing a prayer to his hospital colleagues. It was a 64-year-old doctor who for 40 years had been a senior medical director at the hospital. He was dismissed for emailing a prayer which he thought might be inspirational to his colleagues. And here's this offensive prayer. Teach us, good Lord, to serve us as you deserve, to give and not to count the cost, to fight and not to heed the wounds, to toil and not to seek for rest, to labor and not to ask for any reward, save that of knowing we do your will. This was so offensive, this man of 40 years dedicated service as a senior medical director had to be fired from his hospital post. The head of the British Broadcasting Corporation, BBC, Mark Thompson, admitted Christianity is treated, in his words, far less sensitively than other religions because it's pretty broad-shouldered, he said. He said that as other faiths have very closely identified with ethnic minorities, and as they had to consider possibilities of violent threats instead of polite complaints, see, it's more common that Christians politely complain, but he said the BBC tended to apply satire towards Christianity rather than, for example, Islam. Without question, he says, I complain in the strongest possible terms. It's different from, I complain in the strongest possible terms and I'm loading my AK-47 as I write. And you can see why they don't do satire against Islam on BBC. I mean, these people are peaceful. These people are tolerant. And these people are, yeah, peaceful. Europe is the cancer. Islam is the answer. Exterminate those who slant Islam. That's not hate speech, by the way. Freedom, go to hell. That's free speech. You can just feel the tolerance. Notice how British Airways has managed to distort the national flag that you can't see the cross on the national airline. Isn't that interesting? Who would have thought they could have turned that lovely flag into this wavy thing, so there's no cross there. Now you've just got a bunch of V's. Although British Airways allows members of other religions special status for religious garments, so Muslim women can wear their hijab, and the Sikhs can wear their turban, and the Hindus can wear their kara bracelet, but Christian employees have been forbidden to wear crosses, which they say breaches the BA's uniform code. Here's one woman who lost a job for a cross this small. I mean, that's a pretty small cross. And there have been demonstrations about the British Airways bullying. The BBC has also been criticised for its senseless hypocrisy and no longer referring to dates as BC, before Christ, and AD, Anno Domini, in the year of our Lord, but what they call religiously neutral terms of BCE, before the Common Era, and CE, Common Era. By the way, do you have a power plug here?
Yes.
I was thinking we might run out of electricity just now. Now, here's a British Member of Parliament, David Simpson, who responded to the frequent claims of secular campaigners that Christianity has been the cause of the worst historical crimes in history by pointing out to them that, in fact, it's ideologically atheist regimes that have committed the very worst atrocities in all of history, and especially in the 20th century. He also points out that Christians are facing increasing persecution at the hands of an aggressive secularism. No hate speech, unless it's directed at Christians. He quotes, in the United Kingdom, the policy seems to be that people can do whatever they like against Christianity, they can criticize it, they can blaspheme the name of Jesus, as long as they don't insult Islam. It's sad, because this country is based on civil and religious liberty for all, not to mention include Christians. You would have thought. He then catalogued numerous cases where British Christians who publicly object to homosexuality or sex education or abortion or simply just try to share their faith are facing prosecution. Like this poor man who was an established part of the community putting up his scriptures and preaching in the street, and they now want to say he's not allowed to do that. Here's the UK Thought Police sending a man to prison because he criticised Sharia law. And this man put some posters in his window which was considered considered Islamophobic. And so here's a man, he made an innocuous comment about hijabs and so on, and now this is he's convicted of a religiously aggravated public order offence for putting anti-Islamic literature in his window. Do you know how many anti-Christian literature examples you get in the average mosque? Yet the British government remains mostly silent about the massacres of thousands of Christians at the hands of Muslim militants. So they're concerned about a Christian exercising what I would have thought was free speech against Islamic extremism, but they don't seem to want to say much about some of their good friends and most favored nation type of people who are wiping out vast amounts of Christians. This is reality. This is where you get hate speech. By the way, you can go on YouTube and you can click on this and you can hear these Muslims chanting death to America, death to Israel at the Hajj pilgrimage. Isn't it nice that they are peaceful? What about the car bombs in northern Nigeria? Burning of churches, destruction of churches in Ethiopia and Eritrea, and the bombing of whole Christian communities in Sudan, destruction of churches in the Nuba Mountains. In Pakistan, massive amounts of persecution, sentencing to death of a 12-year-old boy for sharing the gospel with his Muslim friends, bombing of churches in Syria and in Egypt, burning of churches in Egypt, terror and bloodshed of Egyptian Christians, the persecution, in fact, it's called here genocide in Egypt. Christians being beaten by Muslims in the streets. This is destruction of church in Iraq. Stop the Iraqi Christian genocide. 1 million Christians have fled Iraq since democracy came there because they found that bad as Saddam Hussein was, democracy under Islamists is worse. Waves of jihad, persecution, the red dots representing killing of Christians by Muslim extremists. And Burma. Burma or Myanmar. Burning churches, persecuting the Karen Christians hideously. Red China, persecuting Christians. But these people do not get any kind of publicity by the BBC because even though Christianity is completely outlawed in many Arab states, including Kuwait, Syria, Yemen, Saudi Arabia, which are buying British weapons, by the way, with taxpayer subsidies. And then you need to consider Turkey. Turkey is rising into a fundamentalist state. And here they're talking about Turkey joining Europe. Turkey was the greatest threat to Europe for centuries. And there's the Armenian Genocide of 1915 when 1.5 million Christians were wiped out, many of them crucified, many of them burned in their churches by the Turks. And the Turks don't even want to admit to it. It's not even a possibility in their school textbooks yet. And if Turkey joined Europe, you'd have another 50 million Muslims right there in the EU. And then there'd be nothing that could stop them while they murder Christians in these countries. So the situation is hideous. Eritrean Christians facing possible death sentences. This is the kind of cartoons that they're coming out with. Everyone knows the Muslims aren't very peaceful and tolerant. They behead people who convert. I mean, here America fought for freedom in Afghanistan under the name Operation Enduring Freedom. And now there's the death penalty for a convert to Christianity in Afghanistan. The fact is, secular humanism is the most destructive religion of all time, and it's the most intolerant, even exceeding Islam in its death toll in the last century. So, our vision is Europe for Christ. Europe today must be one of the most spiritually needy continents on earth. Here you can see the red at the top showing convinced atheists. Notice how Europe has got only about something in the region of 4-5% convinced atheists. But notice the not a religious person has grown quite a lot. So the official figures of how many are religious people and the actual figures, which is a darker blue, is smaller. So officially more people call themselves Christians than actually practice it by ever going to church. But the situation is not totally dark. There are today in Europe 30,000 Lutheran congregations. There are 19,000 congregations of Anglicans, 15,000 Reformed congregations, Pentecostals have 28,000 congregations. There are 40,000 Christian Brethren congregations, they're quite small, but still. I mean, 55,000 Charismatic Methodists, 14,000 Baptist congregations. Europe is not lost completely. It's a lot of these churches are in decay, many of them are hijacked by humanism, but the fact is there's a lot of church buildings and congregations in existence, and with revival and evangelism, Europe can be won back to Christ. The church is called to be a house of prayer for all nations. Are you and your family and your congregation regularly praying for Christians suffering intolerance and discrimination in Europe? When we think of persecuted churches, we might think people in the Middle East or in Sudan, but we also need to think of Europe. In these countries, increasingly, Christians are being discriminated against and persecuted for homophobia or Islamophobia or something else like that. But where will you find most of the strong Christians today in Europe? Surprisingly, behind what used to be the Iron Curtain. When we went in to Romania and Albania, into Czechoslovakia, Bulgaria, we found dedicated Christians during the heyday of communism under hideous persecution. There's one congregation in Romania, Second Baptist Church in Romania. You can see Lenora and her mom, Harriet, there. This is still panning through the same church. Notice there's more people standing than sitting. And this was one Sunday service, and there were more people outside the church than were inside. Romania today remains vigorously strong. They stood firm against communism. They cut out the communist symbols, the hated hammers and sickles and red stars on their flag. They fought to bring down Ceausescu's dictatorship. And the Christmas Revolution 1989 was very dramatic. The Berlin Wall came down. The Christians in Eastern Europe had been praying for this, fighting for it. The horrible idols were toppled and sent to the junk heap where they belonged. The churches are growing in Romania. You keep seeing so much church growth. This is this little church that I showed you where we were meeting before. And this is what the church looks like now. Massive expansion. They have also started a Christian school and a Christian university. They have got more Baptist theological students in this one Christian university here in Romania than all the Baptist theological students in all of Europe combined. That's how strong the church is in Romania. The Romanian church, I've come across dedicated Romanian missionaries in South Africa, in Zambia, and in America. The Romanians are vigorous. In fact, they are all over ministering around the world. This is their chapel at this university. Europe has an ancient Christian heritage. It's where the Reformation began. Wittenberg, the 95 Theses of Martin Luther, Luther's pulpit. Here I stand, I can do no other. The Stadtkirche, Martin Luther's Sola Scriptura. Lutheran churches in Sweden. This is the church of Ulrich Zwingli, Grossmünster in Zurich. William Farrell winning Geneva to Christ in this very square. And this is John Calvin's congregation, the pulpit where Calvin preached. Europe still has dynamic images to remind us of the great Christian heritage. The stones speak out. From Europe flowed knowledge and the gospel and freedom and the rule of law. This is a Swiss painting, Justice Lifts the Nations. We've got to pray that the Lord of the harvest will thrust out laborers into his harvest field to win this continent back to Christ. And we've got some tools for the job. From one of my missions to Europe, actually from a couple of them, we put together a whole series of the lectures and messages translated into Danish and Swedish and in Flemish, German, Romanian, and this is an MP3 on Europe for Christ that we've put together. We've got a whole lot of lectures to understand the history, because one of the reasons why Christianity is so marginalized in Europe is because of the false history and the propaganda from Hollywood. So getting people to know the real facts and understanding the deceit and the propaganda and the spirit of the French Revolution that has wrecked Europe. And one of the positive ways is these positive testimonies of great Christians of the past, most of them European Christians, who changed the world. And I think this is the antidote to the humanistic propaganda, as we can, by audio and by the slide shares, the PowerPoints and books, we can help people to see the great Christian heritage and reclaim the campuses for Christ. The skeptics are there with all their questions. We've identified 14 of the main ones and answered them. And understand the mind siege, the battle for truth, the biblical worldviews. Professor Alvin Smith has produced an outstanding book of how Christianity transforms civilization. It's a good scholarly work that shows that everything good in the whole world comes from Christianity. Dr. James Kennedy's put, what if Jesus had never been born, a more popular version of the same message, and what if the Bible had never been written? These are the essential antidotes to the poison of secular humanism. And we've got to know our enemy. Was Karl Marx a Satanist? Yes, he was. Marx and Satan by Richard Wurmbrand, an absolutely vital book to be able to understand. And then we've produced a whole lot of tracts to use for evangelizing communists, because communism really is a major part of what we are fighting in Europe today, and guilt manipulation. So we've been working on the different tools for the faith and getting back out with way of the Master onto the streets and sharing our faith one-on-one with the people. This is how we will regain Europe for Christ. Lift up your eyes and look at the fields, for they are already ripe for harvest.